Begin the current daf, Masechtas Erech and Daf Vav. Begin on the top line of the Amud. The Gemara continues the discussion with the previous stuff, and that is our previous Mishnah spoke about the laws of a non-Jew, if he could be Marech. So we had the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, who holds he could be Marech, he could take an Erech and Vav, which the proceeds go to the Bedik Abayis. And although we had a Pasuk that said in Sefer Ezra that they said to the non-Jews, Loy Lechem Belonu Livnes Beis Lekeinu, you're not involved in regards to the temple upkeep. So we explained that that was one time in history when the non-Jews were going to foil the plan of building the Beis Hamikdash, so then they didn't accept. So that was regarding that concern, but regarding afterwards in the regular time when the temple is ready up, then Rabbi Yehuda says we can accept from that. In a belated vein, the Gemara says, Tanachada. We have one brace that says, I'm a non-Jew who donates a donation for the temple upkeep, which was the treasurer's department where they use their monies for the temple. The brace says, we accept the money from him. But the Tanachada, well, in another brace says, we don't accept from him. So Amr Bilam Rabbiach, and this is Lekash, not difficulty. Ha, the second brisa is Bitchila, is in the beginning of the building of the Beis HaMikdash, then we don't accept, as we said in the previous stuff, because maybe their intention is to get in the way, to foil, we're going to become dependent on the money, and then he's going to start delaying and hemming and hawing, and it's going to cause a disruption in the building of Beis HaMikdash. That's when we don't accept. Ha, Besaif, the first brisa is talking about at the end, after the temple's already up, and it's just to support and to maintain the Bedik HaBayis, there we don't say their intention is to foil anything because the Beis HaMikdash is already up, then we accept a donation from them for the Bedik HaBayis. The Amr Basim Rabbi Yechanan, like Rabbi Basim said the name of Rabbi Yechanan, Betchila, in the beginning of the building, Afilamayim U'melech Imakamhem. We don't accept even water or salt from them. We don't take anything. Besaif, at the end, so then it depends. Dava hamasuim, something that's distinct, which is obvious that it's from them. Then a makabim, then we don't accept from them because it's disgraceful that this is known that this is from a non-Jew. And additionally, then they gloat and see, look, well, my stuff is there in the Beis HaMikdash. But dava shein masuim makabim, but something that's not distinct, they want to give money and that will just it'll be used for the temple upkeep. Then we accept from a non-Jew. Now, it clarifies the Gemara, Hecha Dami Dava Masuim, what's a distinct thing? So, Mavesu says, Kagoin Amma Kalge Oriv, like this plate that's an Amma that's called the crowd chaser. Now, the reason why we pick specifically an Amma is because it refers to what's brought in the last parak of Masechta Menachos of Kozayin Medalf. If someone says, Harele Barzla, I take upon myself to give iron to the Beis HaMikdash, so you can't give less than this Amma square of this Kalge Oriv, which what they would have is they would bring these tablets, that these plates that were made out of iron that were amma squared, and they would have these nails that were amma tall sticking out of it, and they would put it and we plate it on the top of the roof of the heichal, the sanctuary, to chase away the ravens that they shouldn't dwell over there, which that's what the word kali either means to chase away or means to prevent the ravens from being over there. That's why we put an amma, but that would mean things that are distinct like that he could say, hey, that's mine. Those things we don't take from the non-Jew. Now, however, must Rav Yisuf, in this interpretation, Rav Yisuf on the previous Gemara, Rav Yisuf asked from a pasuk in Nechemiah. Pasuk says, "V'igeres al Asaf," that they sent a scroll to Asaf. Shem ha'pardes Hashel amelch v'gomer, the one that was in charge of the orchard of the king, etc. Which that was part of when they were starting the beginning of the building of the Beis HaMikdash, that they sent that they wanted the trees, they wanted wood, they wanted from Melech Kairish, who is not Jewish, to go ahead and take for the Bedik HaBayis, for the temple upkeep. So you see that even though it was the beginning of the Beis HaMikdash, Betchila, they took from the non-Jews. But you just said before, from Rabbi Asim Rabbi Yechanan, in the beginning you don't take anything from them. So Abaye said to him, no, Shanim Achusa, the king, the government is different, Delay Hadrabe, because he won't retract, since his initial intention is for the good. So he's not going to end up backing out. Yeah, regular non-Jew, we don't, because even if he wants to donate, then he's going to back out, and then we're going to become dependent, and then it's going to fall through. But by the king, the reason why we, even in the beginning, we would take from him, is because once he promises, he's going to follow through. Dama Shmuel, like Shmuel said, Yama Machusa, Akar Naturi, if the king says, I'm going to uproot a mountain to get what I needed to be done, Akar Turi, he'll uproot the mountain, and he won't back out, and therefore, from the king, we're able to take even Betchila Sabin. Now, Amar B'Hidim Rav, continuing on these themes regarding a non-Jew donating. So he says, Ayvika Chav Meshehifrish Truma Mikiria, a non-Jew who separates Truma from his pile, from his own grain. So the halach is Baitkin, I say, we examine him. Ibadas Yisrael Hifrisha, if his intention was he separated based on the consciousness of the Jewish people, meaning he was saying that wherever the Truma of the Jewish people go, I want my Truma to go. Or another interpretation is that a Jew said to me that I should separate. which Rashi holds that the first interpretation is primary. But be that as it may, he's intending to do like the truma of Yisrael. So then tinas l'kain. His intention is that it should go like a regular Yisrael's truma, which goes to kain. So he give his truma to kain too. But v'mlav. But if he doesn't specify that it was like the intention of the Jewish people, then to unikaniza, then his quote truma has to be concealed and has to be buried, and it's forbidden to have benefit from it, because we're concerned that maybe his intention was for heaven, meaning for hektish, he thinks, oh, let this be sanctified like the Jewish people's sanctify things, and therefore has to be buried, because as Rashi explains, you're talking about bezman hazeh, where something that's sanctified for hektish is forbidden to have benefit from it, like the Gemara says in Mecheres, that today's times we can't do hektish, we can't do erichin, and if one does make it hektish, then the animal has to be uprooted, and garments and clothing and vessels have to just rot. So therefore, we're concerned that he literally made it hektish because he doesn't know what truma really is, and therefore one would have to let it be buried. Now, however, meisvei on this teaching of Rehuda Merav, the Gemara asks from the following brisa. The brisa says, if a non-Jew donates a beam to the Beis HaKnesses, to the shul. And v'shem kasav ala, and there's a name of God that's written on that beam. So baitkin leisei. So we inspect the non-Jew. Imam b'das Yisrael hefreshetiyu. If he says with the intention, the consciousness of the Jewish people, I sanctify, I separated. So yagud. So you cut off the area of where Hashem's name is on the beam, and you bury that piece. V'yishtamish b'meiser, and then you utilize the rest of that beam, and you build it into the Beis HaKnesses, into the shul. But v'mlav, but if it doesn't say his intention was to separate like Jewish people, then tu unikaniza, then has to be buried, because chashin Hashem and b'libel Hashemayim were concerned that his intention was for hektish, for Hashem. And like we said, today's times there's no rectification of hektish, and then we have to bury the whole beam, not just the part that Hashem's name was on. Now, ask the Gemara, time of the Shem kasev ala de b'ikaniza. It sounds like from the Braisa that since Hashem's name was written on the beam, that's why it has to be buried, because it's obvious that his intention was really for Hashem. It says Hashem's name for Hektish, and that's why it says he has Hashem's name written on it. Ain't Shem kasev ala, but if it wouldn't have Hashem's name written on it, it would sound like loy b'ikaniza, that it wouldn't have to be buried. That contradicts Rav Yehuda Merav, which says even without Hashem's name is written on it, he says we're concerned that's for Hektish. Here we see that's only with Hashem's name that we're concerned for that. Says Gemara, no. Hu adin, the truth is, it is even like Rav Yehuda Merav, that even the avagav, the ain shem kasav alav, even if something does not have Hashem's name written on it, namen b'yikaniza, yeah, if we don't know that his intention was specifically like a Jew, then the whole thing would have to be buried. V'hakam Hashem lan, so then why over here we talk about Hashem's name on the beam, is regarding the other part of the halacha. The avagav, the shem kasav alav, that even if Hashem's name written on it, that if his intention was, like he says, to do like the Yisrael, then yagud, then you just cut off the part with Hashem's name on it, v'yishtamish b'meiser, and then you could use the rest. Why? This is the chiddush we wanted to say. The shem shalei b'mkayim alav kadosh, because the name of Hashem, not in its place, is not sanctified. In other words, what it means to say is that the only part that's sanctified is the place where Hashem's name is. And that part, yeah, you cut off and you bury that part. But the part which Hashem's name is not on is not sanctified, and you could use the rest of that beam for the basic necessity for the shul when he says he separated, like how a Jew would do it. Or another interpretation Rashi brings is that actually, when we say Shem Shulei B'mkayim is not Kaddish, it means writing Hashem's name not in where it's supposed to be written, for example, on a beam or on a vessel, then that name doesn't have sanctity because it's not written on its place, on the scroll and the pasig, as Hashem's name is supposed to be. Rather, it's just Hashem's name not in its appropriate place. Then that doesn't have sanctity, which Rashi says the first interpretation he holds is the primary. But the Tnan, which actually embraces, like we see this idea, like by Yisrael, or even the Akum that's doing Al Das Yisrael, that if Hayu Kasav Al Yad HaSekelim, let's say Hashem's name is written on the handle of a vessel, or Akari Amita, or the bedpost of a bed, that doesn't say the whole thing now becomes sanctified. How is it? Yogud Vigness. You cut off the part with Hashem's name, and you bury it, and then you can use the rest. And therefore, that's why we said Hashem's name. You're right. Even without Hashem's name, if it doesn't say he did it for the, like how a Jew would do it, the whole thing would be buried like Rav Yehuda Merav says. The Chiddush was, when he's saying it like Yisrael, all you have to do is cut off that part, and you can use the rest. Now, related discussion, the Gemara brings an Omer of Nachman Amar Rabbi Bar Avuah. Says, Ha'omer Selazu L'Tzedakah. If someone says that this coin is going to be used for charity, the halacha is mutar l'shanaisa. He's allowed to deviate and change that coin and use it for his own personal purposes, and at a later point in time pay back to go for charity. Now, the Gemara says, Sasavim ina, they thought from this halacha that la'atzmayin, yeah, for a person himself, he could change and use the tzedakah and then pay back for the tzedakah. But la'acher, but to lend that tzedakah money to someone else, that light. then he wouldn't be able to do that. Because for himself, you could say that that was his intention. When he separated and designated that he'll use for charity, if he needs to, he'll take it and he'll pay it back to the tzedakah box. But for his friend, he never entertained it, and therefore for his friend, it wouldn't be permitted. However, we learned that Amar Vami, Amar Rabbi Yechanan says, no, bein la'atzma bein la'achar, this disposition, this dispensation that you could change it, is even not only for himself, but even for someone else. Now, Amar B'Zeir, he makes another qualification. He says, Leishon, we didn't learn that you could change that money for your own personal purposes, is Ela de Amar, only when he said that this coin, this seller, is a lie, is on me to give for tzedakah. So once he says a lie, so therefore he has taken responsibility like a neder if, let's say, it gets stolen or gets lost. So it's like his. Aval Amar Harizu, but if he says this coin, doesn't say on me, he says this coin is tzedakah, then Be'ina. But then Be'ena by Lamesa, he has to give it as is. This is stuck, he can't take it. When he's taking responsibility, it's like a neder, then he could go ahead and change it, but a lie, but Zu, he can't. Now, Maskeb LaRava, Rava says, Adarava, to the contrary, Ibchum Mustaba, logic would actually dictate the opposite of what you said. Why? Amar Zu, when he says this, then we would say actually that Mishtamish, but then he could use it. Why? Ki Heiched Delechai Bachar Yusuf, so that he will become responsible for its insurance. Because once he uses it, it's essentially like a halacha called the shelech yad bebekadim. When there's a deposit, which is not his, and he's watching it, and he touches and uses it, then the halacha becomes, it's like in his domain that he becomes responsible to payment if anything happens to it. Even if, let's say, it was a shem echinim, and he normally wouldn't be responsible. So therefore it says, Rava, to the contrary. When he says zu, which is not taking responsibility, it's just saying this is tzedakah, we want him to use it so then he will become responsible. Avalama alive when he says it's on me, where anyways he's responsible for his insurance, then lie. Then we would actually say that he can't use it. So Ella rather says, Rav, the logic that you're saying is not correct. Rather, loishna doesn't make a difference, and either way it's permitted, because like we said, a person's allowed to change up the tzedakah money for himself, for others, and again, it's whether he says alai or he says zu. Now the Gemara says, in Tani Kavasei de Rav, and we have a Braisa saying the way Rav said it. The Braisa says the following words, neder tzedakah, which sounds like it's saying that a vow is charity. Vein hektish tzedakah, but hektish, which goes for Hashem, is not charity. Now the Gemara says, "My kama, what's the Braisa saying? Loi neder, volei hektish tzedakah. A vow and neither hektish is charity, because generally when the person takes a vow, a neder, he's saying that I'm taking responsibility of money to the bedik habayis. So what does that do with charity, giving to a poor person, giving to charity? El lav hachakam, rather says the Gemara, isn't this obvious what the Braisa is saying? Is as follow. It's actually the subject is tzedakah. And it's comparing it to neder and to hektish. It's saying, tzedakah harehi bebal ta'achar. That is a law of not delaying giving the charity money, which is that the Braisa is saying, when it's saying neder it's tzedakah, it means to say that just like there's a law of bal ta'achar, when a person takes a vow to bring a carbon, he's not allowed to delay it 3 yom tovim, or there's a machlik, is actually how much, but he can't delay it, as the Gemara says in the first pek in Rosh Hashanah, on davav v'medav, that when it says beficha, with your mouth, that actually refers to not just a vow, a carbon, but also of tzedakah. So it's saying that neder is tzedakah, means to say that tzedakah has the same halacha like neder, that is halacha, bal ta'achar, that you shouldn't, is a prohibition of delaying the giving the charity. But when it says that hektish is not tzedakah, it means ve'ena kehektish, that tzedakah is not like hektish. Because the ilu hektish, we're in contrast regarding something that's hektish, that's sanctified for the bedik habayis, asalishta mushibay. You're not allowed to use it, it's prohibited to have benefit from it. Tzedakah, contrast to charity money, you're allowed to use it. And if you see in the Braisa like Rava, that to the contrary, you're always allowed to go ahead and use it, whether they say Allah or Zu, you're allowed to use the tzedakah money. Now, Amar Rav Kahani says that Amita Lishmaita says, I said over this teaching, which starts with the teaching of Rav Nachman, that if someone says that this seller, this coin should be for tzedakah, that you're allowed to change it, and so on and so forth. And I said over Kamed Rav Zbin Minarda. Now, Amar, he said to me, this is how you learned this whole sugya, where Rav Nachman, all he said was that although you said this coin is for tzedakah, you're allowed to change it. And then, as we had quoted before, Rav Ami qualified and said, oh, and that's whether if he wants to change it for himself to use it for someone else. And then Rava further qualified it and said that it's whether he says a lie or zu. He says, but anan hachim, but we explicitly masnitla, we learned it actually was all from Rav Nachman. The Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Abba Baravu, Amar Rav, he said all these points. He says, if someone says this coin is for charity, you're allowed to change it for some other purpose. And he said, whether for himself or for someone else. And whether he says on me or whether this, either way, he could change it and use it for his own personal purposes and pay it back to tzedakah later. The Gemara contains a related discussion on this. Tarabam, we learn the Braisa. Someone says, this coin is for charity. So says the Braisa, if it didn't come yet, the tzedakah money, to the hands of the charity collector, then you still let it change it, as we said before. But once it comes to the hands of the charity collector, then already you can't change it, you can't take it back and then use it, and it's already considered that it's owned by the charity. Now, however, we continue to mitbeis in the Gemara, is that really so? But Rabbi Yannai, who he himself was the gabbai, he was the charity collector and one in charge, and he was Yosef, he actually would borrow the charity money for his own purposes, his own power, and pay it back. But we said once it's by the charity collector, it's already considered the paupers or whatever, it's already theirs, you can't borrow it. How is he able to do that? So the Gemara, Shani Rabbi Yannai, Rabbi Yannai was different than Nichul Alaniyim, because yes, it's owned by the poor people already, but they preferred that he do that. Why? Because the Kama, the Mashi, the longer Rabbi Yannai delays, that there's no money now that he has to pay back to the charity that he borrowed from, the poor people like that. Why? Because now Ma'asi, Rabbi Yannai is going to now force the public, and he's going to say, look at the coffers up for the charity, there's no money to give out to the poor people. And then he's going to force them to go ahead and give more charity, umaisel, and bring it to them. So therefore, since there's a gain for the poor people, by him they prefer. But you're right, a regular person, once it goes is given to the Gabbai, he can't change it back anymore, it's already owned by the poor people. Now, continuing on this theme, and regarding a non-Jew donating, so the term of the Braisa, Yisrael Shenadiv Benayra, a Jew who donates a candelabra, oi, ner, or a lamp made out of silver or gold, the basic knesset to the shul, so says the Braisa, Asalisha Naisa, you're not allowed to change it. He donated this, you have to keep it as it is. Sav Reb Chiya Bar Abba L'Meim, Reb Chiya Bar Abba thought to say that this that the Braisa says you're not allowed to change it is Loshna L'Dvar Rishos, V'Loshna L'Dvar Mitzah. Doesn't make a difference if you want to change it for something that's mundane or even for another mitzah purpose. The Jew donated for this purpose. You got to keep it as he donated. However, Amalei Rabami says Nehochem Reb Yechnan, Loshna L'Dvar Rishos. The Braisa was only told about if you want to change it for something mundane. Avol Dvar Mitzah, but L'Shana Isa, meaning Dvar Rishos, meaning something that's not a mitzah requirement, just something out of your own volition. But for a mitzah purpose, then but L'Shana Isa, then you actually let it deviate from the donation of the Jew. And how do you know this? But the Amr Basir, Rabbi Yechanan, he said, by Oivit Kechav, a non-Jew, she's not the menorah near the basic necessity, when he donates a candelabra or a lamp to the shul. So what we're going to see from here, from the teaching of Rabasi, this that he specifically picked a non-Jew, is because a non-Jew is going to scream, and they say, hey, you changed it from what I gave it for. Now the inference is, a Jew who wouldn't scream, because he obviously understands that it all has the intended goal of the mitzvah purpose of serving Hashem, that by Yisrael who wouldn't scream, that you would be able to change it, at least if it's going for a mitzvah purpose. Because if it would be forbidden by a Jew, even for Dvar Mitzah, then why would he be saying his halacha specifically by a non-Jew? It would even be by a Jew. And that's the inference we're going to see, that he says a non-Jew who donated a candelabra or lamp to the shul. So he says as follows, actually, if the title of the owner has not been lost yet from this thing, where people still say on this candelabra, oh, you know, it was that non-Jew who donated to the shul. So then, Asalisha Naisa, if everyone still knows that it's the non-Jews, then you're not allowed to change it, because he's going to come, he's going to find out, hey, what happened to this that I donated? It's not being used in the way it did. But Mishtakeh Balao, but Asalisha Naisa, when no one remembers anymore who donated it, then it's permitted to go and already change it. Now, the Gemara says, Lamai, regarding what did Rabasi say that for the non-Jew, that you're not allowed to change it when people still know it was the non-Jew who donated? Elim Advar Shos, if it's for some voluntary purpose, then my area of kechav. Now, why would he pick specifically a non-Jew? I feel he saw nami. Even a Jew, we said in the Braisa that when he donates, you can't change it. El advar mitzvah must be for a mitzvah purpose. You're using it and changing it. Oh, the time of the kechav mu depay. And the reason why, if the owner's name is still on it, you can't change it even advar mitzvah, is because a non-Jew, he would scream. So you can't change it even for another mitzvah purpose. Avol Yisrael delay pay shapardom, but a Jew is not going to scream and say, okay, look, I donated for this, but they use it for another mitzvah. And therefore you see that by the Jew, you could go ahead and change it if it's a dvar mitzvah. Now the Gemara brings a story related to this previous halacha, that Sha'azrak, who was the name of a non-Jew, that Tayao was a merchant, indiv shraga lebei knish of Rabbi Yehuda. He donated a lamp to the shul of Rabbi Yehuda. And Shani Rachava, and Rachava went and changed it from the designation purposes that the Sha'azrak had donated for. And Vekbed Rabbah, and the Girsa says it's Rabbah, that he was bothered by that, because, like we said, the non-Jew donated, you can't change it from what he gave for. He just donated. Everyone knows he's the one who donated. Ikudami, those say actually that Shani Rabbah was the one who changed it. Vekbed Rachava, and he was bothered by it. Avigadami, some say actually Shani Chazanid the Pumbedisa, actually the attendants of Pumbedisa, they changed the designation. Vikpad Rachava, Vikpad Rabba, and both Rabba and Rachava were bothered by it. Now the Gemara explains. Man the Shani, the one who changed it, didn't we say that if shame Aleho that you can't change it? Savad Leishchir, they held that it's not common that the Shazrik will be in this place to scream about it because he's a merchant, he's constantly traveling, he's not going to come here, he's never around. So therefore we could change it. But the one who was bothered by Yitzhak is Zimna, the Mikravasi, thought, no, at times he does come and he might just chance upon it. He's going to see and he's going to be bothered and he's going to start screaming. And therefore they were bothered that why did they change it from the designated purposes that he donated to the shul. Now the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, continuing the theme of the previous Mishnah, regarding, again, exemptions regarding to this halacha of Erechin, regarding who could be the subject of an Erech vow. So the Mishnah says, Hagoisis, someone who's in the throes of death, or Vahayitz Laharag, or is going out to be executed. Says the Tanna Kamma, Loi Nidr V'Loi Nerech. Neither is the subject of a monetary vow and of an Erech vow. The Gemara is going to explain the reasoning for his halacha. Now, Reb Chanina ben Akavya, he says, Nerech. He could be the subject of an Erech vow, which, as Rashi qualifies, he's going on a Yetzel Harik, the one who's going to be executed. Because, regards to a Geis, someone who's in the throes of death, he also agrees that he's not the subject of an Erech vow, because the Pasuk says in Mikra Chav Zayin, the Hemed V'Herech Geis, you stand him up and you evaluate him. Now, a Geis, someone in the throes of death, cannot stand to be evaluated. And therefore, he would agree that he would not be the subject of an Erech vow, but he's told me regarding the Yetzel Harik, someone who's going to be executed, who could stand. He does have, because Mamnesha Damav Ketsuvim, the money is a set amount in the Parsha of Erech. Because he agrees that, yeah, even the Yetzel HaHarig is not the subject of a Neder vow, because we said the way you evaluate a Neder vow is how much would this person be sold in the marketplace as a slave. Now, this person wouldn't be sold in the marketplace because no one's going to buy him because he's about to be executed in a few minutes from now. So he agrees that he's not neither, but he says he's Nerech because Nerech has nothing to do with monetary value. The Torah says such a person, even if he's about to be executed a few minutes from now, has this amount of value if you take an Erech. Now, Rabbi Yisim, he says, Neidir, Umarech, Umaktish, that these individuals could take a neder vow, could take an erechim vow, could be makdish things, which Gemara is going to explain what's Rabbi Yisi coming to say. The Tanna Kamma didn't say that the Yetzel HaHarig and the Geises can't take a neder, where if let's say he says that my monetary value on me, that he'll be exempt, because all he said was loy neder. He can't be the subject of a neder vow, but he didn't say he can't take a neder vow himself. And moreover, continues Rabbi Yisi, vim heizik chayiv. If this person is about to be executed or he's in the throes of death, if he harms someone else, he's obligated for the payment for the damages that he caused by that other person. Now, the Gemara asks on the Tanna Kamma. Bishlam Agaisis Lay Nidr. We understand that he says the person who's in the throes of death, that he's not the subject of a neder vow because the lav bar dam, he has no monetary value. A neder is regarding how much would he be sold in the marketplace. He's about to die, no one would buy such a person. Fine. V'lei Nerech, we also know why he's not the subject of an Erechim vow, the La Bar Hamad V'Arachuhu, because he cannot stand to be evaluated in the Halacha of Erechim, because he's about to die and he can't stand, and therefore we understand why he wouldn't be Nerech. Ela Yoytzi Lahari, but regarding the one who's about to be executed, so Bishlam Elei Nidr, we understand why he would say that he can't be the subject of a Neder vow, because the La Bar Damu, he has no monetary value, because who's going to buy him, he's about to be executed. But why would he not be the subject of an Erechim vow, like the other opinion in the Mishra B'Chanina ben Akavya had said? What do you mean? But it's just a set amount. Who cares that he's about to die? Says the Gemara, because the Tanakh learned the Braisa. The Braisa says, Minayin Hayetz Laharag, from where do we know someone is about to be executed? V'amar Erki Olai, and he says that his Erechim value is on me. Shalai Maklum, he hasn't said anything. He's not the subject of an Erechim vow. Why? Tamalay, because the Pasuk teaches him a Yikra. It says, Kol Cherim. Now this pasuk says, "Kol cherim asher yochrim in the adam lo yipada meisumas." Now there's different interpretations of what the pasuk is coming to say. It says anything that will be condemned, which through a condemnation of a person, you can't redeem it. Surely it will die. So the way he interprets this pasuk is that Kol cherim is saying that any person that's fit to be condemned, meaning because he's about to be executed, the pasuk is telling us lo yipada. He's not in the category of redemption of his monetary value having any value. So therefore, that's where he learns out that since he's about to be executed, he's not a Nerech, he's not the subject of Erechim vow. Now, continues the Braisa, Yechla fila koid mishnig medina, you would think the same thing would be even before the verdict was handed down. Tamalayman, that's what the Pasuk says. No, min ha'adam, from the person. Not every type of person that's going to be condemned is going to be not going to be in the category of pidyon. It's only if you have a pidyon, if you have a gemar din, v'loy kol adam, not every single person. Meaning, if it's before the gemar din, then he will have an erech valid. Now, so then the gemar asks, Rav Chanina ben Akavya, Dama Nerech, that he says that actually the Yetzel Harik is the subject of Erech and Val, because he said it has a set amount. So then, Hai Kol Cherim, my Avidle, what does he do with this Pasuk? How does he interpret this Kol Cherim if he's not interpreting it the way the Tanakam is? So the Gemara, look at the Tanakam, like learn the following Braisa. He says, we find by people that are liable to be killed by the hands of heaven, meaning through divine intervention. For example, this that the Pasuk says regarding if someone has an ox that killed somebody, so the Pasuk says, Hashar Yisakal, the ox has to be stoned, Vigam Ba'al of Yumas, and also the owner gets killed. Now, this that the owner gets killed, you can't say it means in Bezdin, in the human courts, because the Gemara says in the first Pasuk, Sanhedrin of Tezvav Mabez, the Pasuk says, Mais Yumas Hamaka, the one who kills someone else is going to be killed, because Reitzeachu, he's a murderer, which teaches us, regarding his murder, you kill him, but you don't kill him for the murdering of his ox. So when the Pasuk says that he's going to be killed, it means through the hands of heaven. Now, we find over there, that he could redeem his death sentence from heaven by giving money and getting atonement. Like the Pasuk says in Shemais. It says, "Im kaifer yushasalav," if the cleansing money will be placed on him, which is the halach of kaifer, which actually he doesn't get killed. He gives kaifer, which is the value of either his value or the person that was killed the value, and that gives him atonement. So yachal av b'dei adam kein, you would think that someone that's also guilty, that's liable for the death in the human courts, they would also be able to redeem himself with money. That's what the Pasuk is teaching. Kol cherim, any person that's condemned, lo yipada, cannot redeem himself. So it's teaching a different halacha that someone that's chayv misa b'dei adam cannot redeem himself with money. Now continues the Braisa, only ila misis chamur. So I would only know that limitation is only for severe death penalties. Shlei nitna shigugasin l'kapara, that when the person commits it erroneously, he can't get any atonement. Like a blasphemer or someone who curses his father, where if he does it by mistake, there's no carbon, there's no exile, he has no way of atoning himself. But Mises Kalis, but at least in this regard, that when it's lighter death sentences in the sense Shinitna Shigugasin l'kapara, that we find that when someone does it by mistake, he could have an atonement. For example, like a murderer who does it by mistake, he could be atoned by going into exile. And someone that does idolatry or desecrates the Shabbos or has immoral relations, where if he does it by mistake, he could be atoned with a karma chatas. Minayin, how would I know that even over there you cannot atone yourself when you do a b'mezen, that you get a death penalty by b'dei adam, you cannot atone with money? That's the Pasuk teaches, kol cherem, anyone that's going to be condemned b'dei adam cannot atone himself with money, and therefore that's what he's using the Pasuk for, not like the Tanakam. Now the Mishnah continues, says Rabbi Yisrael, he says, Naidu Marech V'chulu, the person who's about to die, but he still, if he takes a neder or an erech vow or hektish, then it has validity. So the Gemara asks, what, and the Tanakam, Mikamar Dalai, what, and the Tanakam says that you don't? What's Rabbi Yisrael coming to disagree with? So Eliezer says, the Gemara, you're right. But Naidu Marech V'chulu, regarding this person who's about to die, when he's taking a neder vow, an erech vow, or it's making something hektish, Kul Amalei Pligi, no one's going to disagree that most definitely his neder is a neder, his hektish is a hektish, and when he's making an erech of another person will have erech in value, because he's a regular conscious person, and what he says has value. Ki Pligi, their dispute was regarding the second phrase of Rabbi Yisi, Be'im Hizik, if this person is about to die, damages. Tanakama Savar, the Tanakama held, Im Hizik Inachai B'tashlumen, that actually if this person damages, he's not liable for payment. As he says, Rabbi Yisi says, no, if this person causes damage, he's going to be obligated in the payment. Says the Gemara, regarding what are they disagreeing about? So Rabbi Yisi says, B'milva Alpeh, regarding an oral loan, like in this case, where the person damaged, but he didn't yet have a verdict, and he died already, so it was never solidified as a concrete debt, it's just what would be called an oral loan, which we know the person owes, but it was never solidified. Their machlekes is, can you collect that from the inheritors? Because this guy's dead already. Question is he going to be obligated? Is he going to be obligated to pay? Meaning, will the inheritors have to pay? The Tanakama held, milva peh, like in this case, where it's like, quote, an oral loan that he owes, but never documented. In the Goyim and the Yerushin, he can't collect from the inheritors. Therefore, he's not going to be liable to pay because he's dead already. For Biesi Sava, he says, no, milva peh, Goyim and the Yerushin, even the oral loan, you could collect from the inheritors. And therefore, he says, chay b'tashlumen. Another interpretation, which the Gir says, Rabba Amar, he says, no, the kulam milva peh in the Goyim and the Yerushin. Everyone agrees that an oral loan, you cannot collect from the inheritors. But B'halch over here, B'milva k'suv b'tayra k'miflagi. The dispute is regarding a loan that's written in the Torah, meaning the obligation to pay for damage is written in the Torah, meaning the Torah already makes him indebted even against his will. So it's a loan, so to speak, a debt that's already documented in the Torah, and it's regarding that they disagree about. Tanakama held, milva k'suv b'tayra, even though it's a loan, so to speak, that's written in the Torah, lavka k'suv b'shtar dam, it's not like it's written in the document, so it's like an oral loan. An oral loan, the Yershin don't have to pay, and therefore this person who's dead now doesn't have to pay. For b'yisi sav held, no, k'suv b'shtar dam, it's like it's written in the document, and therefore the Yershin will have to pay. Now, v'igad amasnila, that those who learn these two interpretations of Rav Yisim and Rabba, not on the halacha that we just said in the Mishnah, but rather on the following b'raisa. Raisa says, Hayitzi laharig, someone who's going out to be executed. So, who shechava b'acherim chayev? If he injures others, so this person is obligated because it's regular, full-fledged, conscious person, although he's about to die or be executed, he's still causing damages to someone, so he has to pay for that person's damages. Acherim shechava l'bayi b'turin, but others who harm him, who's about to die, they're exempt because this person who's about to die is what's called imlay damim. He has no blood, he has no monetary value because he's about to die anyway. He's about to be harmed and be damaged. So therefore, the one who damages him doesn't have to pay, which as Rashi qualifies, we're talking about that this person is about to be executed, is according to the judgment of the Jewish courts. Now, Shimon Lazam, he says, no, afhu im chavu b'achem patra. Even if this person who's about to die harms others, he's exempt from payment. Why? Shlei nitin l'chazar samidis bezni, because he's not in the category of being brought to court to be brought to justice. The reason for that is because you can't bring him to court and to make him stand in court regarding the damages that he did, because there's a isser, the prohibition of inui hadin, of delaying his judgment where he's about to die, and since you can't stop him from being executed, so you're not going to be able to bring him to court anyway, and therefore what he harmed others, you can't take him to court, and therefore he's going to be exempt. Now, as we continue to talk about Zayin and Av, the Gemara asks, what? Machlal the Tanakama, what the inference is, that the Tanakama who says that he will be liable, Sava, he holds Nitin Lechazar Samis Bezin, that you could bring him to court, but they also agree that you can't be Ma'anis Adin. So why would they then say that he is Chai B'tashulman? So Rav Yosef, and this is where this interpretation is, B'milval Peh Govimin Ayoshna Kimifagi. What they're disagreeing about is regarding an oral law, oral loan, can you go ahead and collect it from the inheritors? Tanakama Sava, the Tanakama held, you're right, you can't be Ma'anis Adin. You can't make this guy who's about to be executed be brought back to court. But it's a milva pet, it's an oral loan, and government a yershin. You're right, you're not going to collect it from him, but it's a debt that's going to be collected from his inheritors. Whereas Reb Shimon Lazar Sava, he says, no, in the government a yershin, you can't collect it from the inheritors, and therefore he's going to be exempt even when he harms and damages others. Another interpretation, Rabba Amay says, no, the kulam milva peh in the government of the Yershin. Everyone agrees that an oral loan, you don't collect from inheritors. The halcha b'milva k'suv b'tayra, k'suv b'shtar k'milva, their dispute is regarding this oral loan, which is written in the Torah, because the Torah says that when someone damages, you're obligated. If that's like it's written in the document, that's what they disagree about. Tanakama sava k'suv b'shtar, the Tanakama held, it's like written in the document, and therefore a written loan is Yershana obligated, and therefore this person who harms others is going to be obligated. But Bishma Laza Savalak Subashtadim says, no, it's not like it's written in a document, it's like an oral loan, which according to this interpretation, Evan agrees that an oral loan, the Yershana don't have to pay, and therefore when he harms others too, he's going to be exempt from paying, because again, Evan agrees he can't be brought to justice, and therefore the Yershin, since the Milva Peh, because it's Lavkik Subashtadim, are going to be exempt from paying.